Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Answers for the Family will address many ways of creating greater health, joy, and love for your family. And we will introduce you to top professionals and talented authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, I really appreciate it if you would all do me a big favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media groups and to someone you know that can benefit from today's subject. Now, this is one powerful way that we together can make a positive difference in the world. Now, before we get to our guest, I want you to know that I am truly grateful to all of you who take your precious time to listen to this show, and especially those of you sending in questions, comments, and reviews, and suggestions, and I like them all. Please remember, this show really exists for you. And with that in mind, if there was ever a time in recent years that we needed to focus on gratitude, this is the time. So I want you to know that my son Chase and I wrote The Attitude of Gratitude Journal, something that at the time was geared towards teens going through some changes in their life. Well, what we realized is we're all going through changes in our life right now. So please go to our website at answersforthefamily.com and download a free copy. It's our gift to you. All I ask is that you subscribe, which is also free. Give it 21 days and comment on whatever platform you listen to us on, what focusing on gratitude has meant for you and your family. And I think you will find that as you pass that on through your family, you'll realize that gratitude is going to help get us through a lot of things. So with that in mind, now a quote, although not from the journal, I found this on our guest's website, and it is, happiness can be found even in the darkest of times if one only remembers to turn on the light. And that is by the fictional character, Albus Dumbledore. So if that sort of foreshadows a little bit of where we're going with this, I'll ask the question, have you ever been baffled about why you were stuck? Maybe why you felt frustrated, stressed, sad, or even scared? Now, according to our guest today, the truth is not every part of you wants what you think you want. So some of your inner selves might be opposed to your goal. So our guest, Bridget Danelle Gaspard, is the author of The Final Eight and the founder of the New York Voice Dialogue Institute. She is a former performer who earned a master's degree from Columbia University and teaches at numerous professional settings, including the Omega Institute. She lives in New York City, where she maintains her private practice. Bridget, welcome to Answers for the Family.
It's wonderful to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. I enjoyed not only going through the book, but going to your website and seeing a lot of the things that you're doing. And now that the gyms are back open, there are people that come up to me because while I'm doing cardio or something like that, many people who now know about my show will come up and go, so who's your guest this week? And so I'll tell a little bit about it. And one of the questions that I got was, they go, The Final Eight, what does exactly that mean? So, and I tried to explain, and I said, look, I know it means something to do with finding completion, but share with us, you know, about what the title of your book and The Final Eight, what did it mean to you when you made that decision?
The Final Eight is literally failing inside of victory. So it's for people who are hardworking, creative, talented, and they get 7/8 of the way there, and then it's a mystery. They literally are so close they can smell it. And it's a cherished goal, and yet they find themselves stuck. And examples abound, you know, of that. You mentioned the gym, the final 5 pounds you don't lose, or that great business idea, everything's in place, but you just don't finish the business plan to get the funding. And or people who are ready for their life partner, they're dating productively, and it's just like when they get so close, what happens? And I found it just came out whole one day in my practice because I knew everyone was working as hard as they said they were because I'd been with them. And I was just as curious and confused, like, why aren't you moving forward? You've set it all up. You're creative. You're talented. Then I realized, because not all of you wants the goal, and for very good reason. There's wisdom in the stuckness. And that's when I thought, okay, it was working in my practice. I really want to spread the word because it's based on a tool, which we'll probably get to, called voice dialogue, where you talk to these different parts of yourself. Because we all, in our healthy personality, have many selves. This is about healthy people struggling in life and also triumphing in life.
Well, I want you to know I'm looking forward to it, and I'm also looking forward to you sharing it. And one of the reasons is that, you know, I think back many years ago to college, and the textbook definition, I guess, of this situation was self-sabotage. That's what they kept coming back to, you know, so whatever it is that you would read and they would say, well, you know, this is a form of self-sabotage, but I never really read or heard anything that explained it quite the way that you do, again, with your voice dialogue. So, you know, let's go ahead and just, you know, let's introduce that. So, you know, if you can introduce the process, you know, of voice dialogue and tell us more about how it works and when one knows if it's really right for them.
Exactly. The negative label self-sabotage. Even if it's true, what do you do about it? Like, okay, great. What's my next step here? Fine. Mm-hmm. I'll even admit to that. So I stumbled upon voice dialogue, which is a technique literally, and it's outlined in the book, where you move to a different part of the room to talk to a different part of yourself. And then you always come back to center so you have access to that wisdom. And they also, these parts all have concerns. So for example, if you go to your good girl, and men and women have good girls and good boys, and that all can be however it is inside you, but you listen to that good girl. And my book has a series of questions you can ask, like, where do you live in the body? What are your concerns? And you never ask the good girl to loosen up and be a little wilder. Then you go to your wild child self and you never tell her to calm down. And that self might not even sit. And that self talks and communicates. And you get to see the energy of that self. They're so different. So, and then you come back to center. So a few things you start to realize. And in my book, through voice dialogue and the final eighth process, you get to have more control, basically, of being the conductor of your own orchestra. A lot of times we just think we're wind instruments. And so we lead with those through our whole life. And, you know, it could look like someone who maybe talks just a little whispery and doesn't really assert their opinion. And then you realize, wow, I have percussion. I have throat singing. I've got all of this stuff, but I still need to operate in a way that's functional. So the other thing I think this technique does is it makes you think of things upside down. So I could go to a self that said, yep, I'm your sabotaging self. So in voice dialogue, like, wow, all right, well, good to meet you because you come out a lot. Tell me more. And you get curious. And I have never seen a part not be connected to the noble purpose of protection. So even that self-sabotage and is like very dysfunctional in your life. Now, you have to change the way it's functioning, but still you've got to listen to it. So a self-sabotage self has gifts. And what are they? And that's part of the process. So a self-sabotager might say, no, if you triumph, you're going to make everybody in your family feel bad because they're going to be envious. You can't be better than everyone in your family, or something that usually surprises you. Or no, if you make that much money, you're going to get debt again. And I can't, because you're going to think you can afford everything. And so what happens is you end up focusing on different issues than you thought you would. So it's not really about maybe that stalled novel. It's more like, wow, if I get that yes from the universe, how can I practice safe success?
You know, what it makes me think of, and it's a term that I've used when self-sabotage or whatever, but so I've started to say, you know, I think I've been shooting on myself, I want to do this, but I should do this. And I end up going with the should rather than the want or the desire. And I've tried to work on that, but that's kind of the feeling that I get when you're saying that.
I love that. So we would go to your should self and ask what it cares about. And maybe, for example, and I have a chapter devoted to this, that should self is wanting you to obey all your 8-year-old rules. You know, you should do this by this time or whatever it is. Then you can update them. Say, well, we're not in our 8-year-old sphere anymore. And so sometimes then you kind of give these selves a more important job, like, well, you know, you should follow up with that financial planner because we really need to think about such and such, so that the should actually serves your higher purpose. So again, you can't get rid of your should self. You can't get rid of any self, but you can align them purposely for your higher good, the higher good of the planet. And that's the exciting part.
No, and I love that, because what I hear you saying is just give yourself better shoulds, you know?
Yes. If you're going to should on yourself, then should good.
Yeah, should good. Okay, I think we can hashtag that, right?
Oh, I like that. Should good.
Okay, so now for those of you out there that understand this a lot better than I do, so somebody go out there and should good, or hashtag should good, and send them to our show.
I love it.
So another thing that you touch on is the difference between a primary self and a hidden self. So share a little bit about what the difference between them are, how we can tell which is which.
So our primary selves are the parts of ourselves that we lead with. And I have exercises to help people to identify that. So one way is like if your friend said, oh, Alan, he's X, Y, and Z. That's like what the world sees, especially if you're happy about it. Oh, good. My friend said I was responsible. I'm glad. I want to be considered responsible. So that happiness that you're identified that way lets you know, yes, that's a primary self. I'm proud of it. I want to be known for that. And I'm that. Mm-hmm. But for every primary self that we have, there's a hidden self that we've squelched. Again, none of this unhealthy. When we were young, this process started, and we had to fit into society. It's not okay to bonk your playmate on the head with the toy whenever you want. But if you, for example, have squelched those impulses, whether it's anger or spontaneity, then they show up in different ways, and they're hidden because they scare you in some way, or you think they're inappropriate. Now, you might be correct that they're inappropriate. However, voice dialogue is a safe way to have a direct relationship with some parts that are technically maybe a little dangerous. You don't want rage, but you want access to your anger, for example.
Oh, yeah. Now, is there a particular self that seems to pop up that is the one that is most involved when we stop a project right at the finish line?
I would say not necessarily a particular self, but it always involves fear. Now, fear can look differently in different parts or different people. And that, of course, depends on culture and gender and age and developmental stage. So the actual self that's playing out the fear and what that looks like might be different. But in some way, success is unsafe to that part. And they're saying, whoa, absolutely not. And it could be something, and this is why you explore and find out, like, I don't want you to look stupid. If you come out as an expert, what if you get it wrong and you look stupid? Well, then with my process, you'd say, okay, it is possible you may actually look stupid. You may literally say the wrong thing by mistake. Now, can you strengthen other parts that can handle it? That can say, oh, let me correct that. I'm sorry. Yesterday I said X, but really it's Y. So that you also don't set yourself up for these false standards. Like, no, it's not going to be, let's hope you never make a mistake. And you shouldn't go further if you're so paralyzed by the idea of making a mistake. Let's get it so you can handle mistakes. What parts have made it so you can't? What parts do we have to cultivate that said, all right, doesn't feel good to admit this, but I made a mistake. So there's always wisdom in that part. That's why I'm like, a self-sabotage part, bring it on. I want to meet that sabotage. Tell me all your tricks. And another question I ask these resistant selves, What's your favorite success story? How badly did you make that success not? And then you have so much information, and some of it will be painful and hard. But if it's there, it's easier and more productive to just deal directly.
You know, I think one of these inner selves that is probably more prevalent right now than ever before would be the deserving one. How much of this now, or how much worse is it getting from the standpoint of people self-sabotaging because we've been told that we don't deserve it, that we were somehow still have to pay penance for something else that we've done or that our ancestors have done?
I was just thinking that, right, or our ancestors, yes. Mm-hmm. So I would call those the feeling worthless is a core negative belief, and it's very much a part of the final eighth process. So there are parts of us that still believe it, even if a lot of physical fitness work. And so what happens is, let's say this core negative belief is you're worthless, you don't deserve it, and they're all painful. There's not a core negative belief that isn't devastatingly painful. So you get 7/8 of the way there and suddenly you stall and you find out these are parts that are just like, no, if it's true you're worthless, then how can it be true that you're worthwhile to be a victor? And so this internal dissonance is so painful that it's actually less painful to stop and have that struggle than to have the painfulness of kind of feeling like a hypocrite inside. But wait, if I'm worthless and then people want to give me all of this and my what I do works out, it doesn't make sense. And then voice dialogue helps you just love those usually very young, tender parts that believe this very, very painful belief. And I was never true you were worthless, but it might be true you believed it. It might be true you were told that's what you were. And it's probably true you made decisions you now regret because you based them on the false premise that you're worthless. And so in there lies grief and love, not punishment, and not running away from those parts. Yeah, wow, okay, I can grieve that. But the great thing about grieving is it gets processed. People worry that they're going to always be sad and they're never going to stop this flood of tears. It's not true. When you can isolate something you're actually grieving about as opposed to sort of long-term depression, the grief then gets processed and it alchemizes into your gold. You get that energy back and it's yours then once again for the higher purpose, for your goal, your cherished goal.
You know, one of the things that you have in the book, and I thought of yourself, and that makes sense. But one of them that you had in there was listen to the inner slacker. So share a little bit about, you know, why we should listen to the inner slacker, or is the inner slacker also the saboteur? And, you know, so what are some things that we can do? Because sometimes we get tired and it's, you know, or we're, you know, we're moving along great and then we get stuck somewhere. And so a lot of people, especially now with a lot of people being more inside, you know, that, okay, well, I'm just going to go sit and watch TV and kind of let our mind, you know, go off somewhere else and in essence, slack. let's talk about that because that one I thought was interesting.
So the inner slacker, any self, but especially particular selves like the inner slacker, we do because we're in society. So in our society, for most people, slacker is a negative label. So I sometimes think of the process as a detox. You get to have your own opinion about your inner slacker. And you also get to identify like, wow, I've really got this negative idea about my slacker. Maybe I don't actually believe that, or maybe I do, but I get to find out. So the inner slacker makes me want to do it. Because I know that we're on video. Now, the inner slacker, if you look what I'm doing, I mean, it's fabulous. An inner slacker is usually relaxed, often probably breathes much, much deeper than you normally do. So as the slacker, if you do voice dialogue, it's not just about language with words, it's body. So you get, and the slacker can tell you what it cares about. And I don't know, can you think of a few gifts yourself of either your inner slacker or one in general?
With high anxiety, you know, and I'm fortunate I live in a beach community. So, you know, it can be, okay, I'm stressed, I'm getting away from the computer. and I'm just going to go walk on the beach. And then, you know, pull up a chair or sit in the sand or whatever and just relax and just decompress a little bit. So I know that that's positive. But then I think if I start doing that or something similar too often, that now I'm just being lazy. So it's like, where's the balance?
Right. So you said exactly. So every self has a spectrum, right? Where it's really an invitation to go relax. So the slacker, if you have a direct relationship with it, you don't go moving to the judgment right away. You're like, you know what? It's true. I've been really stressed. The best thing to do is take a walk. But then it's true that if that's all you did, or then say TV for 24 days in a row that of hours and hours every day, then that's the sting. Every self has a gift and a sting. And so the idea is that you get more strength as from your center place to be able to say, okay, the slacker is right. My 24/7 workaholic wants to keep going. And that part gets a lot of stuff done. But you've also nailed it. Sometimes people are stalled because that slacker cannot imagine a busier life. That slacker says, whoa, we're this busy and you want to go even further? No. So that again often shifts the focus. It's like, right, how am I going to manage my life so that I don't not exercise because I'm too busy, or I fall into really bad eating habits? And so in a way, sometimes I think that stall is a great way to practice safe success, which I have a whole chapter to that, because it's arming yourself in advance to actually succeed.
Now, I have what I call my 80-20 rule as it relates to eating healthy. And I didn't make it up. It was already out there. But my thinking was that by eating healthy 80% of the time, that time when I want, you know, a deep dish chocolate chip cookie with vanilla ice cream on it or whatever, and I have it, that I won't go through so much anxiety over the fact that I was eating it, that I've actually, the anxiety was worse for me than the sugar and the carbs and everything else that came with it. So are you saying that we can do this a little bit with our inner selves also, sort of an 80-20 rule? Let the lazy self kind of win this battle for now, but just don't let it take over?
Absolutely. I love that. And I might say that with voice dialogue, to even try to get out of the paradigm of win or lose. Okay. And also the gift of that self, or the delicious chocolate chip cookie that sounded yummy. Yes, because the other thing is, it's a lifestyle. And here's the thing, you either have a choice, or there's going to be some inner revolt, and you either just go on a binge and you lose control, or you get sick. A lot of times, if people don't listen to their slacker, that's when they get the stomach flu, separate from what we're going through as a globe with COVID. So that's the other thing. It helps you get more real. Like your 24/7 self is going to say, no, we got this, but it's not true. And so the slacker might say, hey, we could take this walk on the beach and feel wonderful. Or in 2 days, you could catch that cold and then you don't get out of bed for 2 days because you're just feeling so bad. So that's the other thing, is that it often puts things in perspective, and it's like, oh, I'd much rather take a little beach walk or thing. Is it like brings in a gentle way the true choices, not in a way sometimes the false choices that some selves like to seduce you with.
Mm-hmm. You know what? We're going to take a break in a little bit, but I have a question that's come in, and I want to thank those that take the time to send us questions. This one came in through email. And I know that with a lot of people, especially people that are back to work, they're working in the middle of the day right now. So they send these in ahead of time. So I always want to make sure that we can get to them. What I'd like to do is ask this question, and then we're going to go to break. So it'll give you a moment to think about how to answer it. And so for everybody, I want you to stay with us. But the question is, my sister has sunk into a very deep depression, and as a result, has lost her job. Oh, I'm sorry. No, as a result of losing her job. Okay. And at 45 and unable to find a new position, is becoming even more despondent. This lockdown here in California has been the worst thing for so many. And next month, she will have no choice financially but to move in with our parents at 45 years old. I was wondering if your book would assist her through this period of time. And this is from Henry in Long Beach. So for everybody out there, the reason I wanted to pause for this is because I think there might be a few other people that are finding themselves in this situation, especially now with what's going on. So, and for those of you, if you know somebody, you know, contact them, have them jump on, and so that they can hear Bridget's answer. But we're going to take a break right now. Stay with us. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back, and we are talking about your inner selves, that there are multiple ones. So Bridget is with us, and she has written a book that touches on exactly that. And the question that came through was, you know, my sister has sunk into a very deep depression as a result of losing her job. And at 45 years old, she is to a point in which she feels she may have to move back in with their parents. And the listener that sent the question in said they're wondering if her book would assist her through this period of time. So Bridget, what would you say to this person going through this right now, or many other people, especially now with so many people losing their jobs and having really drastic changes in their life?
And I want to say many things, including what a lovely brother she has. So mm-hmm. Yes, I do think it would help. I think my heart goes out to her. This is such a difficult era for so many people. And a few classic starters is if she can get hooked into psychotherapy just to have regular weekly support, especially for depression, that just helps so much. And get an assessment. Does she need medicine? So I also want to say that because sometimes things get so bad, our physiology takes over. So if her depression is really getting into her physiology, you can deal with that as well. And voice dialogue absolutely is a part of that. The other thing is, I do think the book would help for several reasons. One is, okay, she has to move back to her parents' house. So certain selves in her, her teenage self, whatever unfinished business self, unrelated to the terrible feeling of being 45 and then being let go through literally no fault of her own on so many levels. But that just feels superficial, I'm sure, from her point of view right now. So if she gets the book and uses this time to go inside and then find out what primary cells she has, use the book to figure this out. But also many of ourselves that have access to our higher purpose whisper. And if she can deliberately use this time to say, I want to listen to the parts of me that are whispering. And remember, every self has their point of view, and none of them hold the whole picture, including depressed selves. So as a loving brother, I would validate her pain. Don't tell her to cheer up. But you can point out maybe her strengths. You know her better. Maybe when she was a teenager, she's like, you know, I always loved working with my hands, and maybe she's the one that crochets incredible blankets for everyone. And I know that sounds a little bit cliche, like turn stuff into a business, but the truth is what she didn't like about her life before, she could maybe shift and then It's not permanent. When she moves out of her parents' house, she has a whole new plan that she may eternally be grateful for. And of course, people can reach out to me. I'm reachable.
Oh, and that's great. And by the way, everybody stay with us till the end, because I'll make sure that all that information is there so that you know how to get a hold of Bridget. Now, in your book, in one of the chapters, you encourage the readers to practice militant self-care. Is this one of the areas that would be perfect for this the sister of the person?
Henry, thank you. 100% yes. They have done studies now on self-care. Self-care actually improves your mood and expands your ability to think. One of the problems with depression and depression selves is if your focus gets so narrow that you literally think there's nothing else but this terribleness. So self-care literally makes your physiology shift, and it helps with benefits that really echo out into many areas of your life. So yes, and self-care can be anything from take the bubble bath to make that appointment, say with a therapist, because it's caring for yourself. And so the action, that doesn't always have to be a soft and fuzzy bubble bath action. Self-care actions can look in any number of ways, but it literally will make you feel better. And it's not because we say so. Research bears this out.
So why don't you give us an example of why we don't want to ignore those parts of ourselves that we may find negative or that we want to push aside. So just give us an example of just, you know, what you mean by that.
So one that pops out is, let's say I have a resistant self, the self that says no, and I'm struggling with my goal. My resistant self just is like, I can't concentrate because I feel this self, and like a four-year-old. And many of ourselves are little inner children. And so we want to reject that part of ourselves. I wish it wasn't there. So voice dialogue does the opposite, which is already a change. And then you find out about that inner self. Maybe the resistant self just wants to make sure that you have time in your week for fun. And it really is just a four-year-old whose power is to say no. And that's the other thing, is that you start to notice these different selves, like an inner teenager in you is going to have different tools than your wise sage or your four-year-old no person. And so the more you have access and thus compassion as a side effect, not because it's mandatory, then you can deal with them directly and they actually shift and you don't have the same struggles.
No, I was just thinking, there was he's still around anyway, the comedian Billy Ball did a song called Here's Your Sign. And I've made the comment sometimes to people who are acting like one of those people. And I go, you know, sometimes we should just wear a sign. It says, you know, right now my inner self is about 4 years old and that's why I'm reacting this way. You know, but it's meant to be humorous, but based on what you're saying, it kind of fits.
Absolutely. And you know what? Even thinking about what Henry said about his sister, those wounded selves in her, she might just want compassion. Like, hey, let's take a walk on the beach. She might not want to talk about it. I love that. So even if there isn't an actual sign, you as someone in any family can say, wow, I see that her reactionary self is out. I don't need to engage in a conversation. I might say, hey, let's put a music dance.
Now, another thing that I had made a note of in the book, because I didn't exactly get it, but you mentioned something about a double bind. So what is it and how does it prevent us from reaching our goals?
So a double bind is a psychological quandary. And in terms of the final eighth, it's literally the parts in you that want the goal and then the final eighth comes and it's the parts in you that don't. And you're at a standstill. And they literally call this double bind because if this works harder, this is going to work harder. And so whatever you're doing, you have to do something differently because this isn't going to work. And it's actually a psychological term for when it's a false choice. And Sophie's Choice, that movie, like pick which child to give up to certain death. That's not a real choice, but that's a double bind because she doesn't really have a choice. So it's there's a little bit of provocative cruelty in that a one, or not more than a little. And so a double bind sometimes is you're locked in your own lose-lose situation instead of saying, all right, let me step back. Let me get in relationship to these selves that are stopping me. And that breaks the double bind.
Well, which leads me to one of the things you touch on, which is creating a new self. And I love that as I'm going through it and I'm going, okay, so I've got this one that's doing this. And then you bring in the part about, or you just create a new one. So share with us a little bit about that, or we're just getting familiar with a self maybe that we haven't been engaging with that much and turning them into allies. And then can you tell us a little more about using a crisis? So for instance, now with the COVID crisis, be it the virus or the way it's being handled, as an example of ways to either create a new self that helps us through it, or how to get familiar enough with one that's there that maybe we've just ignored for a long time.
We create new selves naturally. All of this is based on the natural process. So when we were 4 and went to school at 5, we naturally started to create student selves and peer friend selves. So keep that in mind, that even as you're cultivating a self that you may not have thought about having before, it's still natural. And if I could even use Henry's sister, when she goes back home, she doesn't have to be the same person that she is with her parents. She can actively cultivate the adult daughter with boundaries. So these selves that you cultivate can help you. Let's say that it turns out part of your final eighth issue is that you'd rather just work harder, but what really scares you is getting out and promoting your business because you're shy. You have a lot of shy selves. So then you might need to cultivate a hostess with the mostest self. And can do, how do they do it? And you then do your version. What I also love about it is it's so empowering. And in terms of COVID, the people are wrenched from places they loved, like the office and the gym and school. So you have room for the grief, but okay, what selves need to appear here? Look how many homeschoolers that did not plan on being homeschoolers. So many parents have had to cultivate the homeschool selves and home teachers. And so we can do it because we are an amazing species as humans, but you can consciously cultivate it, and that makes it easier and usually much more efficient.
Okay. Now, one of the things then is at some point in time, some of us, the goal that we had just wasn't one that we should have had to begin with. You know, there are some things, and again, I think we can use what's going on now. We can be led down a path because of someone who is trying to tell us something, or maybe it's a goal, but it's a really negative goal. What's one of the best ways that we can decide whether it's time to just let that one go?
I wrote the chapter of let go of the goal if you want to, because I realized until I wrote that chapter, my book was geared to all the type A selves. And I thought, well, I'm not being inclusive. So there's many different ways you can tell. And so, and you have to understand that it's not necessarily certain. But if it just literally doesn't please you and you don't want to, and you realize maybe that was your dad's dream for you, or it's just what the family did and you felt lucky that you could just move into the family business, those parts that are like, well, let's just not make waves. And then you realize, but I've never wanted to do that. And so part of the process is figuring out what you do want to go do. But so much of our society gives pressure. Well, wait, you've done this much and now you're going to leave it. That makes you a quitter. So I acknowledge all of this pressure, but if indeed it doesn't fit, it's okay to take it off and walk away. Like in snakes and they're slithering out of their skin. Like it's part of nature as well to say, oh, I don't want this anymore. It doesn't fit.
I think that's a great analogy. And because I think there are so many things that just don't fit. I mean, it may have started out sounding like it was something that was good, or if you have somebody that is maybe, you know, more, and they're lonely, so they're being drawn into some things and they're kind of looking a little bit too hard, and you get so far into it and then realize this really isn't for me. And I like the fact that you've addressed that. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to ask the question, is because I saw it in the book and I thought, I think this is an area that a lot of people could relate to. So I'm glad that we touched on it. We've got another listener question, and this one reads, Sometimes I feel as though there are three different personalities popping in and out of my life. One wants my marriage to thrive. Another one wants out of it desperately. And the other just wants to curl up in a ball and hide from the world. Since I can't imagine that I'm alone with these thoughts. But my husband thinks I'm bipolar and that I need to be on medication. I need therapy. He wants to be married to a consistent personality he can depend on, being the same person the same day, every day. My mother sees nothing wrong with it and thinks creative people have varying moods. So what is your opinion? And would your book give me some guidance? I saw it was available on Amazon, and this is from Ginger in Seattle.
Well, thanks, Ginger. I absolutely think the book would help. You said something about kind of ricocheting between the part that wants to just crawl up in a ball, the part that wants the marriage to thrive, and the part that wants to leave. Voice dialogue gives you a way to stop the pendulum shift. So you're in center and you get to be with that part of yourself that's crawling in a ball. But you also get to be in that self that wants your marriage to thrive. And you also get to be with that self that wants to end the marriage. And the book has questions. And you've asked yourself these questions from that part's point of view. And that part can just speak. I highly recommend you do this for yourself. Don't share your answers with your husband until you have a bigger sense of the big picture. Because when we come at our loved ones in a particular self, they don't realize that you're connected to all these other selves, and they interpret everything by just the self that they're dealing with. So keep that in mind, that it starts as a personal investigation. And then what other selves? Your mom mentioned you have creative selves. That sounds wonderful. And so maybe the other thing in terms of your marriage is the shift between yourselves has to be between you and you, basically. And if you're constantly making them out and wanting validation from your husband in a way he can't provide, he might want to, but it's not his job in a way. If you have the direct relationship, it may shift enough that your husband feels he's got a consistent personality. And you're like, but I'm still in my many parts. Yes, but you are at the center and you're not ricocheting. And the book is so good at helping that.
Now, speaking of books, and it reminded me, years ago, there was a book called Sybil. Mm. And in that book, it touched on people who had different personalities, but that it took over to the point in which the other personalities didn't know that one had taken over. Share a little bit about that and the difference between that and what you're talking about.
Thanks for bringing that up. I think it's still on Netflix because Sybil still comes up to this day. Yeah. Sybil had what is now called dissociative identity disorder. It is a terribly sad disorder. It's trauma-based. You don't get that if you haven't had trauma. And a big key is if you don't remember being in a self. Now, anyone who is told they're in a self and they don't remember, go get psychiatric help and also psychotherapeutic help. It is a mental illness, which has a lot of help, but what we're talking about is healthy personality. So a big key is remembering that yourselves. And if you do, more than likely you don't have dissociative identity disorder. And the other thing about that is when someone asks about Sybil, which I'm really glad you bring it up, what they're also asking is, am I crazy? Because it's a terribly painful if you really, really wonder if you're crazy. That's why gaslighting is so effective if you want to hurt somebody. So no, you're not crazy. And I always like to tell people, I also think the hidden question about Sybil is, I just want to touch base that I'm not crazy. And you're not. And it's a very, very important question. Thank you so much for bringing that one up.
Well, when I was reading the book, it was one of the things that came to mind, because that was something, and especially back then as a psych student, you know, that was one of the things that our professors would constantly go to, and they would go to it as examples. And it was interesting that they would use that, which is, you know, more of a mental illness, as an example, but yet they never really went into the examples that you're talking about, which is just healthy ways of different parts of our brain to pull us in one direction or the other. So,
which is kind of interesting. And I get that. And I think part of it is parts work. The first psychoanalyst brought it, like we are healthy because we are made of parts, was in 1920 from Italy, Assagioli. So there's a long, really hefty history of healthy parts work in psychiatry and psychoanalysis in the early days. And then Jung brought in all of the Greek and Roman myths and the varying gods, which represent the archetypes of the human. So yes, I like to think programs today are more inclusive, including mentioning the trauma-based parts effect, but also including the healthy, positive, empowering aspect.
Okay, well, we're running short of time now, but if there was one thing, what would you say is the most important thing? If there was a takeaway from this and someone was now going to share what they heard today or what they watched, if they're watching it on YouTube or Facebook Live, if they were to share it with somebody else, what would you say is the most important thing that they could share with somebody else? And even if it was just enough information to say, I mean, go to the website or go get the book, and they can feel as though they walked away with one great tool, that one jewel that they went, this is what I got out of this.
I got out of this that we all have different selves and they all have wisdom. And even if I have a current negative opinion about that self, if I get curious and dig deep, I'm going to understand the noble way they're protecting me. And then I can change it if I want to. But whatever negative beliefs these parts have about me, they're probably fundamentally wrong. And I can go find out what is going on. And it's so exciting.
All right. Well, for everybody out there, we are talking with Bridget Dengel-Gaspard. The book is The Final Eighth. If you would like to get it, you can get it at Amazon or anywhere where books are sold. You can also go to her website at finaleighth.com. If you're driving and obviously you can't write this down or whatever, we will make sure that all of Bridget's information is on our website, the answersforthefamily.com website. Bridget, I just want to thank you so much. I just really want to honor the fact that you are providing something that I think is so beneficial, and especially right now, because I think right now people are going to be changing. We're going to have a shift. And if you have that ability, I think there's so many people out there that they've been stuck in a job that they felt that they had to do. They were shooting on themselves rather than doing what they want. And they can now look at it and go, you know what? I can finish that thing that I've always wanted to do, but I just didn't quite finish it. So I tell everybody, I mean, I want everybody to know, go out, get the book, help yourself get to that point to where you can decide that you're going to finish the thing that you see yourself doing for a very long time. So Bridget, thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for having me.
All right. And for everybody out there, please, you know, if you get the opportunity, please, you can go to our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com, and you can subscribe to the show through iTunes, YouTube, iHeart, Stitcher, Spreaker, or SoundCloud. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review. It will help us reach more people, and we greatly appreciate it. And in regards to next week, you know, it's been reported all over the world that drug and alcohol addiction, depression, and suicide have risen substantially in 2020. So if you join us next week, know that we're going to be joined by Faith McDonald, the author of On the Loving End of Crazy, Finding Hope for a Loved One's Crippling Addiction and Depression. And in this interview, Faith describes how she watched her beloved son self-destruct and how she grappled with challenges that will resonate with many people who feel helpless and don't know where to get the help they need when a loved one's life is on the rocks. So for everybody out there, please be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.